Welcome back, everyone, to StadiaCast, your place for all of the Stadia news. Before we get started, you might be wondering, where the hell is Lloyd? I don't have Lloyd today. Lloyd is AFK today. So it's just me, and that's okay. That's all right. We can still figure this out together. We can talk about Stadia. I do a podcast about Nintendo 4 days a week all by myself, and it seems to work out okay. Before we get started, I do record this show live over at YouTube.com/StadiaCast. It's at 10 a.m. Eastern. Again, YouTube.com/StadiaCast. If you go there, you can hang out with a bunch of people. Like right now, there's well over 100 people in chat. You guys are fantastic. Thank you very much. If you're watching this on YouTube, by the way, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe and click the bell so that you get notified whenever I go live or post a new video. If you want to directly support StadiaCast, there's lots of ways that you can do it. You can easily head on over to anchor.fm/StadiaCast and click on the support this podcast link. And then for as little as a dollar, you can help us create future episodes of StadiaCast. And if you're here with us live, you can also use the Super Chat feature to support us and make sure that we see your message. There's tends to be lots of people in chat, and chat goes by pretty quickly, so it gets difficult to pick out all of the important messages that you guys send. And Super Chat is one of the ways to help. And already, I want to thank Adam, William, and Brother Tax for their super chats. You guys are fantastic. Those actually, like, one of those happened before I even started streaming, and then the other two before we started the show. So, thank you very much. So, what is today's episode going to be like? And that's a fair question because, you know, it's just me. It's not a discussion with me and Lloyd. So, today's episode. If you didn't know, I also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/StadiaCast, which I may have mentioned a time or two. But I posted like a bunch of videos to that this week, and I decided that usually it's a discussion between me and Lloyd, but what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to take those YouTube videos and I'm going to put them into the audio of the podcast, because I know a lot of people watch the YouTube and don't listen to the audio, and a lot of people listen to the audio and don't watch the YouTube, so I'm going to do a little cross-pollination since Lloyd's not here. Before we get to those things, though, I want to talk about the main discussion, which is definitely something I wanted to talk about. First off, John Justice was supposed to be on the show sometime this week, and unfortunately, he had to cancel. Well, he didn't say cancel. He said postpone. And I said, okay, well, if you're postponing, does that mean that you're going to be back on before launch or after launch? And the reply was definitely want to be on before launch. So I know that there's a lot of people who... when I tweeted this out that it was canceled, I got a bunch, my DMs are open, and I got a bunch of DMs from people who were just calling me a liar, saying that I never had an interview with him. And I was like, okay, you can believe what you want. That's fine. I don't have any way to prove it to you other than posting the emails, and I'm not going to do that because that's proprietary, like that's their information. I'm not going to give out people's information. So you can believe me if you want, or you cannot. It's really up to you. So the John Justice interview was supposed to be this week, and my plan was to post it yesterday. No, not yesterday. Friday. I was going to post it on Friday, and then today I was going to discuss with the community what we talked about on the John Justice interview, all of the little tidbits that he was able to tell us. Now, we don't have any tidbits of information from John. However, he did meet with the guys over at Tested. That is Adam Savage's YouTube channel, where they tear stuff apart and build stuff, and they talk about technology. And they got to go to the Stadia offices. Lucky John, if you're listening, I would love to come to the Stadia offices and talk to you in person. But anyway, they got to go to the Stadia offices and get hands-on with Google Stadia. And then they sat down with John and an engineer whose name I have forgotten again. I had it and I've lost it. But They had about a half an hour conversation about the technology behind Stadia, and I thought I watched it a couple times, and I picked out some of the information that I thought was very interesting, and I want to talk about that. So let's go ahead and discuss that stuff. First off, John said in the interview, 80% of U.S. households have access to gigabit Ethernet. And I feel like while that may be true, it's also prohibitively expensive. Like a lot of places in the U.S. Paying for gigabit Ethernet, or I'm sorry, gigabit internet, is not something that most people are going to be doing. It's just too expensive. Like I'm not sure how much we pay for the internet at my house. I know that it's a lot because my wife is very, very nice to me, and she knows that I love to do streaming and stuff like that. So we pay a lot to have 300 down and 20 up. Now, sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes, and we have no other options where I live. I live in the middle of nowhere, and we have basically one ISP that will provide decent internet speeds, and they know this. So they have absolutely zero motivation to improve. And it's been very, very frustrating for me as a content creator and as a streamer. Uploading video is very, very important to me. I, like right now, I'm uploading video. In fact, just before I hit the record button, I was running into issues where my video was not uploading. And so I went downstairs and rebooted my router. We'll talk about routers in a little bit, but rebooted my modem. And that seems to have fixed it. But I shouldn't have to do that. Now, once Stadia comes out, that won't be nearly as big an issue for me, because for some reason, the only issue that ever happens with my internet is my upload speed. And upload speed is not that important to streaming on Stadia, because you're just sending your button presses. That's not a whole lot of data. So that's like in the kilobit range. It's very, very small. You can send that data with very minimal upload speed. Download speed is very, very important in that case. And my download speed is always fine. There are never any problems with it at all. It's always solid. And I think for most people, if they had the same issues that I had, most people wouldn't even notice, because most people don't use their upload speed hardly at all. That's why you have to pay more to get upload speed. What I would really like as a Twitch streamer, as a content creator that posts YouTube videos and uploads a lot of stuff, it would be amazing if I could say, hey, I don't care nearly as much about my download speed. Let's just cap that at 100 and give me 100 up on my upload speed as well. But they don't have that plan. But anyway, I've gotten distracted. This is one of the reasons why it's good to have Lloyd, because he, you know, he can rein me in when I get distracted by a shiny thing. So, John said 80% of U.S. households have access to gigabit. But I personally think that in the U.S., there's not enough competition for internet subscriptions. And because there's so little competition, they can charge whatever the hell they want. And so while John says that, yes, 80% of households have access to gigabit, I think the number of people who actually use gigabit are going to be a very, very small percentage of that 80%. And that's because it's going to be very, very expensive. All right, that's the first piece of information that I thought was really interesting, and that's my response to it. My next piece of information that I found interesting would be their hardware that they have running in the data center is so incredibly powerful that they're actually running their games at 120 frames per second, but then streaming them at 60. And why is this important? This is important because it decreases the amount of time between when you press the button and the game realizes that you've pressed the button. So it decreases the lag even more. Justin just gave me a super chat. They said, I found you randomly last month and I'm loving the show. I love the dynamics between you and Lloyd, who's not here today. This is the most trustworthy source of Stadia news I found. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that super chat. Anyway, running the games at 120 frames per second and then streaming them to us at 60, that is really going to decrease the latency that we see. In fact, they spent a lot of time talking about overall latency in with Google Stadia. Like they're encoding every frame in sub milliseconds, and it's because they're the specialized hardware that they have made is so powerful. They're able to do that. And I think that that's very, very impressive. And it brings to mind the competition. Well, who is the current competition for Stadia? And I know that some people might say Shadow. I don't really think so. But what comes to mind number one is xCloud. You know, xCloud is the dominant competition to Google Stadia right now. And they are basically just streaming your Xbox to you, or they're streaming an Xbox to you. They're not running on dedicated, powerful hardware. I mean, not that the Xbox One X is not powerful, but they're not running on this super powerful hardware that can run these games at 120 frames per second and then render every frame in sub milliseconds because they have this super powerful hardware and then send you the data. So I think that that's one reason why I believe that Stadia is on the right track, whereas while I think the xCloud is definitely doing some good things, I don't think it's a fair comparison between them. I think that Stadia has a leg up. Of course, this is somebody who has not tried xCloud because I don't have an Android device, and I haven't tried Stadia because it's not out yet, and I haven't gone to any place because Google hasn't invited me. but I cannot imagine that what Xbox is doing is going to be able to compare to what Stadia is doing, because they are fundamentally different things. Xbox or xCloud is essentially renting you an Xbox. Stadia is not making a console. And I know I've done the whole console versus PC debate, and they actually kind of talk about it in this video a little bit. They're not really making a console. It feels like a console to us, right? But to them, they are making this infrastructure, which is incredibly different from a dedicated machine that does this one thing. And that is what is so very interesting to me. And I can't wait to hear more from Jade Raymond about what they're doing at Stadia Games and Entertainment with their new studios. By the way, I'll take this moment to mention that we do have some news about that. We've got they are planning on opening up their first studio. Pardon me. Their first studio is opening up in Montreal, which is actually pretty close to me. So I, you know, maybe I'll get invited to go there. That'd be cool. It's only about 5 hours away. I drive that. They're opening up a studio in Montreal, and then that's their first studio. Their next studio is going to be in London and Japan. So they're opening up a bunch of studios, and I feel like the pace at which games from Stadia Games and Entertainment, or SGE, as I think that they want to be called, I think the pace at which SGE games are going to be coming out is going to increase, and I think that that's fantastic. So I found that to be very interesting as well. All right, back to the tested video. Another piece of very interesting information is what they learned from messing around with VR, this idea of late frame reprojection. So this whole idea is you are moving a camera around with your head in VR. And this has nothing to do with VR and Stadia. This has to do with what they learned from making VR stuff and how they applied it to Stadia. But late frame reprojection basically means that you give an input, they render that frame. At the end of that frame, you give a little bit more input, and the game recognizes that, but the frame that that is coming to you has already been rendered. So how do they adjust for this extra little bit of input that you have sent to them? This is basically what they're saying. So what they do in VR is they have this thing called late frame reprojection, where they add a parallax in post. The frame has already been rendered. So basically on its way to you, it has some new parallax added to it, which makes it possible for it to make it seem seamless when you're moving around. And this is very, very important for, because it allows them to fix these small changes that occur late in the pipeline in order to make everything seem smoother for the end user, which I found to be incredibly interesting. And I wish that they had talked more about this, but they did not. What else did they talk about? I don't want to spend too much time on it. I lost my my little window that tells me how long I've been chatting for. There we go. This is pretty important. They are working directly with Epic and Unity, as well as the other proprietary engines, in order to have Stadia integrated into those engines. Now, as Stadia launches, we have games coming out for it, but as these engines get updated to directly work with Stadia, it's going to make it so much easier for the developers to bring their games to Stadia, because it's built right into the Unreal Engine and the Unity Engine, as well as the proprietary engines that other publishers and developers are using. I find this to be very, very important, especially because earlier on in the video, John Justice specifically said Stadia games are not simply ports, which I was assuming that porting from other platforms to Stadia is going to be easier than porting from other platforms to Nintendo Switch, because Stadia is more powerful, the Switch is less powerful. Now, this doesn't mean that I was wrong about that, but it does mean that it's not easy to port to Stadia. And the reason is because they have all of these extra things that they want developers to care about when they're bringing their games over. Things like CrowdPlay, things like YouTube integration, so that you can say, hey, keyword, how do I get past level 5? And it brings up a little video. Like, all of that stuff is stuff that they actually have to build that is not part of the other games. And that means that there are significant changes when you are making a game for Google Stadia rather than on other platforms. So I found that to be very interesting. And the last piece of information that I will talk about here before we have a break and hear from our sponsors is that Stadia already has multiple hardware revisions for the future in development. Like, they already have, I think they said, I can't remember off the top of my head. I watched the video a couple of times, and one of the times they said it and I forgot to write it down. And then I just didn't watch the full video the second and third time because I was super busy. They already have multiple hardware revisions for future in development. What does this mean? It means that down the road, they can take out an old blade. And actually, you know what they'll probably do? They'll probably leave those old blades up so that people can play older games on them. And as new games come out for Stadia, they just turn on some new blades someplace else in a different data center. And, it's going to be more powerful. It's just like upgrading your Xbox to an Xbox One X. It's just like upgrading your PlayStation to your PlayStation 4 Pro. Like, those are not super huge jumps, but they are jumps in processing power and the ability that these consoles have to run. So the fact that they already have multiple revisions for years down the line already in the pipeline and figuring this stuff out, I think is fantastic. And it's one more piece of information that shows that Google is taking this seriously and they are going to take this as far as they possibly can. All right. Let's take a break and hear from a sponsor. Before we do, I want to say thank you to Joel Thompson for their super chat, which they asked, am I bummed with no mention of Stadia at BlizzCon? And I will get back to that when we get to the crowd play section. Stick around, everyone. We'll be right back.
I'm number one.
Hey, everybody. I've got a quick little update for you. This one comes to us via 9to5 Google. Apparently, there is an APK Insight post. What that is they decompile the APKs. The APKs are the apps that are on the Google Play Store. And one of those apps is Google's Family Link, which is basically like parental controls for Android. And it allows you to go in there and say, yes, you can use the device from this time to this time. It's a great idea. Anyway, the APK Insight post talks about the fact that they decompiled the newest version of Google's Family Link, and in there was some new stuff about Stadia, so I thought that I would tell you about this. Now, it's weird that I'm going to 9to5 Google for these stories. I've been covering the video game industry for a while, and very seldom do I come to websites like this to cover video game information, because this is usually just about like what's hot with the newest phones or whatever. But because Google makes phones and there's a lot of Google based sites out there, it looks like I'm going to have to become more well versed in their stuff. So let's talk about the APK Insight. Like I said, the Family Link app has been decompiled, and we have some new information. So first off right here, Stadia game approval. It says, building on what we've seen before, Family Link 1.49 adds a variety of strings detailing precisely what info parents and guardians will be given when asked to approve or deny particular Stadia games for a child. This is awesome. This is one of the things I did ask John Justice about when we talked. He said, we're not ready to share that stuff yet. Hopefully that means it's going to be ready for launch, although I didn't anticipate that it would come out for launch. Maybe it's not here for launch. Who knows? This is a very cool thing. Like we're an iOS family here, and whenever one of my kids wants to download a new app, I get a little message on my phone. I look at my phone. I can look at the app. I can see what age rating it's for. I can see if there's in-app purchases. I can look at the reviews. I can look at screenshots, and I can say yes or no. And I think that that's really awesome. And the idea that this can happen from Stadia and send it to the Family Link app, I think is huge. Now, my first question, as somebody who is an iOS guy, my first question is, will I be able to do this on my phone? Because I mean, it shouldn't be all that hard for Google to give us the Family Link app on iOS and let us approve and or disapprove of purchases that our children want to make. I think that that's really important. So what exactly is the string that they found? Well, first off, right here, it says string name equals Yeti approval. By the way, Yeti, I guess, is the code name for Stadia. I don't know who actually figured that out at some point, but I guess it's pretty well known at this point. So Yeti approval section title accessibility string and Yeti approval section title input string. So first off, these two are pieces of information are telling us what kind of accessibility the game has, understands, like, does it have colorblind mode? Does it allow you to use third-party controllers that have that kind of accessibility stuff built in? And then input, this is going to tell you, is this a game that, at least I'm assuming, is this a game that will work with mouse and keyboard or controller only? What kind of stuff can you expect? So that's important information to know when you are about to approve or disapprove of a purchase on Stadia excuse me, or on a platform, because if you don't have these particular things, then you might not want to accept it. So if it's a game that requires controller only and your kid is playing on their Chromebook, then you don't want to approve that because maybe they don't have a controller. That kind of stuff is pretty important. All right, right down here, we've got string name, Yeti approval section, title, regions. For this, I assume that this is telling us, first off, what's the name of the game and what regions is this available in? So, you know, sometimes games are available in certain places, but not in others. For instance, sometimes games quite often are not available in China because they might depict things that glorify death or something like that. For instance, like World of Warcraft, they have an undead race in World of Warcraft, and like they could see like their bones sticking through their skin and everything. And in order for that game to be released in China, they had to change the models so that that wasn't a thing. They also are showing us languages here. That's very, very important. What languages is this game available in? If a game is not, I don't want to say translated because that's not the word that the gaming industry uses. And for some reason, I'm spacing on what game, or I'm sorry, what term they use. Anyway, it's right on the tip of my brain. It's going to come to me about halfway through the video. If it's not translated into your language, then you probably don't want your kids buying that. This is very interesting. They're going to create a distinction between the release date of the game on Stadia and the original release date of the game. I don't know why, as a parent, that I would really care about that, but I always like when they give us more information. And just like I said, it just occurred to me what it's called. It's called localization. So not translating, localization. Translating is just straight up changing the words over. Localization entails a little bit more than that. Other information that we have additional game details, which I have no idea what that really means. Then we have parental consent. I assumed that all of this was parental consent, so I'm not sure about that. We have the description. Obviously, this is going to be where the store is telling you what does this game do. Gives you more game details, who the developer is, what genre it is, how many players it's going to be. Like, is it a single player? Is it a multiplayer game? Who the publisher is? What is the age rating? This is huge. Being able to see that this is rated for E for everyone or something. So, for instance, my son will ask for a game. He is 11. I will look at it. It says 17 plus or something on the App Store, and I say decline. It's super easy. Let's see what else we have here. We also have family library. Stadia Link 1.4.9 also adds some of the strings expanding on the idea of having family library of Stadia games. Now, just because they use the term family library, this does not mean that you are sharing stuff. When I asked John Justice about this, I said specifically, when I buy a game, am I buying that and then I can share that with my family, or am I buying it for just me? He did not have an answer for that, and hopefully we'll have an answer on that soon. But they are using the term family library. This could just mean these are things that are approved for members of your family. So here it says review games. So I think it'll allow us to see the game's reviews based on what people say. And then here it says gender, select other. These are games you've already approved. It says right here, these are games you've already approved for person. Choose if you'd like to block access to any of these games. They can always be re-enabled. So I'm not sure why that says gender there. That's kind of weird, but this is huge. The reason why this is huge is because I can say, all right, you can play this game from this time to this time, but after that, I'm going to shut it off. So for instance, a parent might say you can play Fortnite for 2 hours, and then after that, you've got to play something else, something that is less competitive, a little more relaxing, you know, that kind of thing. So I like that you can turn this on and off on a game by game basis. I think that this is incredibly important. We also have right here game restricted by content rating. So it looks like we'll be able to say my kid can play these games. You know, any game that is rated up to T for teen, but they can't play the games that are rated M. So then when it pops up, it's going to say, oh, you can't approve this because you've said that they can't play these games, because of its rating. It also says this game is not available to allow or block because your content rating, setting already restricts access to this game. So basically you don't have to worry about blocking a game that is already rated M if you blocked the entire rated M. Now, my only problem with this is, based on this, it feels to me like what this is saying is I can't block M-rated games, but then allow a specific M-rated game through, which that I don't like. I wish that I had a little more granular control. Of course, this might not be features that we see at all. This is just something from a decompilation. Is that the word? Decompiling? They tore apart the APK and looked at its guts. So we might not see anything with that. All right, Stadia and Google Play. It says here, once a parent has approved a game for a child, there is still a matter of paying for it. They have not, they have not told us how we're going to be paying for things, but it looks right here like there is a call for the wallet client for Google Play services built into Google Pay. Now, I've gotten a lot of people asking me to ask John Justice, are we going to be able to pay for games with our Google Play Store cash? And so far, I still don't know the answer, but it seems like we might be able to, which I think is pretty good. Let's go on. It says here, string name, Stadia approved consent info. Allow the publisher to access your child's Stadia friends list in order to offer certain multiplayer and social features within their game. You can change this privacy setting anytime at the specific user URL, and you can learn more about how your child's data is used. This is very good. This is obviously required by law. I'm 99% sure that this is required by law. Like, they can't not do this. They have to notify you how your information is being used, especially for a child's account. So this is the kind of thing that happens on all the platforms. Like, just the other day, I installed Asphalt 9 on my Nintendo Switch. And after installing it, it said, do you want this company, Gameloft, to see your account information? And I said yes. And then I received two emails from Nintendo telling me, hey, they can see who your friends list is and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, that's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. This next one, it says, by clicking approve, you agree to the Stadia terms of service, the Google privacy policy, and you describes how it, okay, I don't really care about that one. That's not really important information. Then this string tells us you already said yes, so we don't need to send this to you. Finally, this is pretty interesting. We have the idea of bundles. So it seems like you can buy a bundle and quite often I see things like, I'll use Fortnite as an example. In Fortnite, you can get a bundle which will give you access to the game, obviously, because it's free, but it will also give you things like this pickaxe and this skin. So those things are all bundled together, or maybe some V-Bucks, you know, something like that. Like, so you can buy a bundle, and this is saying, look, this is part of a bundle, and this is the stuff that comes with that bundle. So you can see that ahead of time, and hopefully you can tap on each one of the things in the list and say, oh, okay, well, that thing is $10, and this thing is $10, and this thing is $10, but the bundle itself is $20, so I am saving $10 by doing that. What would be even better is if they would just do the math for you and show you. I think that that's what they do on Steam, which I think is very, very cool. So anyway, big thanks to 9to5 Google for taking this information from APK Insight and taking it apart for us. I will see you guys on Sunday. I know when the John Justice interview is, but I'm not going to commit to a day because I don't know how long it will take me to edit and get posted. But rest assured, you all will be the first to know when the interview is over. So if you haven't already, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, and don't forget to click the bell so that you get notifications when I post a new video. It also lets Google know that we do good work here, so they will recommend us to other people. And with that being said, we will see you next time. Thanks. Bye-bye. So after I posted that, I did get a message from Mario Garth, who said there is, in fact, a Family Link app in the iOS App Store. And I looked and absolutely there is, which is awesome. Somebody else pointed that out, but they wanted to know, well, they mentioned that they didn't think that it made a lot of sense because it couldn't control other iOS devices. And that's not really what I was interested in. I'm interested in getting a notification from Stadia saying your son wants to buy this game and me being able to hit yes or no from my phone, whether I'm on an Android phone or an iPhone or my iPad or whatever. You know, wherever I am, I want to be able to get that notification and click approve or deny because that makes my life convenient. I'm not looking for a way to control my kids' devices because we have iOS and they have all that stuff built in. And if you're on Android, they have all of that stuff built into the Family Link app. I just want to be able to make decisions about what gets purchased and what does not get purchased via Google Stadia. I've been asked this question a lot since I started StadiaCast. And it's a question that definitely deserves an answer, but there's really two answers that I have. There's a long answer and a short answer. First, the question. How much do games cost on Stadia? The short answer is I don't know how much games are going to cost on Stadia. I'm just as much in the dark as you are when it comes to this. However, there is a longer answer that definitely deserves to be explored and examined. The longer answer starts with Phil Harrison. Phil Harrison was asked how much games are going to cost on Stadia, and his answer was, I don't see why they would cost anything different on Stadia than they do on any other platform, which is a wonderful answer. Now, before we get to how much they should cost, let's talk about the reasons why people are asking this question. We'll start with the Nintendo Switch. The Nintendo Switch recently came out. Well, recently, two and a half years ago, it came out. And when it came out, it got a lot of ports. There were a lot of games that were ported to the Nintendo Switch. And when they were ported to the Nintendo Switch, they cost more. Now, why did they cost more? Well, there were a couple of reasons why they cost more. First off, a publisher is always going to ask for an amount of money that they think that they can get every single time. And porting to the Switch is not an easy task. There's a lot of work involved. And in order to recoup those costs, publishers are going to try and charge as much as they can. They looked at the Switch, and what they saw was a lot of the games on the Switch were more expensive because they had these cartridges to pay for. And the cartridges were expensive, much more expensive than discs. And so the price of the game in the store was more expensive. Now, a lot of times, these brick and mortar places, they will tell publishers, if you want us to carry your physical editions of the games, then you need to have the same price on the digital storefront that you have on the brick and mortar storefront. That's not always the case, but many times that is the case. And a lot of times the publishers will feel like they are beholden to these brick and mortar stores and they'll say, all right, we're going to do that. And that artificially inflated a lot of prices for games on Nintendo Switch. So people look at Stadia, this new platform, and they say, are our prices going to be artificially inflated? Excellent question. And then they ask, hold on. Why should we pay more? Why should we even pay the same price when we're not able, like we're not getting a physical copy? Not only are we not getting a physical copy, but we're also not actually owning our games because if the service shuts down, then we won't be able to play our games anymore. And that's a completely different argument that I don't really want to get into on whether or not buying a game a streaming game is different than buying a digital game. That's not a discussion that I want to have for this because, you know, I don't want the video to get too long. That's a discussion I can have some other time. So, you know, we take all of these things together and we arrive at the conclusion that the games probably should cost what they cost on other platforms. The publishers have to do the port. Now, recently I've said things along the lines that porting to Stadia is a great deal easier than porting to, let's say, the Nintendo Switch, because Stadia is more powerful, where Switch is less powerful. And while I still think that that makes a lot of sense, recently the guys over at Tested interviewed an engineer from Stadia whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head, and they interviewed John Justice. By the way, my interview with John Justice has been postponed, and he said that he still wants to talk to me before the system launches or before the service launches. But he wasn't able to meet with me today like we had planned because something came up at the last minute. And of course, I understand. And I apologize to anybody who was really, really looking forward to it. It got postponed. But anyway, in the interview with Tested, which I might kind of go through with a fine tooth comb and make a video about that video. Maybe, I don't know. One of the things that they said specifically was that porting to Stadia is not as simple as clicking a button. There's a lot of things that that Google wants publishers and developers to do to take advantage of the things that make Stadia unique, which is really, really good, but that also increase the costs. Now, anytime that you tell a developer that you're going to increase the cost, the publisher says, hold on a sec, we may need to charge more for this. And if we look at it, they charge more for it because of the increased development costs, but then maybe they charge less for it because we don't actually own the thing, we're just streaming it. So at the end of the day, does it balance out? And I guess that's really the most important question. How much are these games going to cost? And Google's been quiet about it. I mean, Phil Harrison, like I said earlier, he did say, I don't see why they would cost anything different, but that might be referring to new games. So when a new game comes out, a game that's just launching on PS4, we'll say it's next year. There's a brand new game that comes out. It's launching on Project Scarlet. It's launching on PS5. It's launching on Nintendo Switch. It's launching on Stadia. Same price across the board. $60 is generally what it goes for. All right, same price across the board. However, when you're porting old games to Stadia, well, when you're porting old games to any new platform, I tend to feel like publishers feel justified in increasing the price on the new platform just a little bit. So, sure, you can go and buy it on, we'll say, the PS4 for $20, this Game X, and you can buy it on the Xbox One for $20 for Game X, but on Stadia it might be $30. And the justification for that is that porting a game costs money, and if we want these games, then they're going to have to charge us enough for them to make enough money in order for them to justify making the game on the platform. So whenever there's a new system, the price of the old ports tends to be higher than buying those ports on a system that has already been established, perhaps the system that the port or that the game originally released on. So I feel like we're probably going to have brand new games cost exactly the same price as they do everywhere else. But ports, I anticipate, will probably be a little more expensive on Stadia than they are on other platforms where they already exist. That's kind of a a past practice that we have seen in the past, especially with the Nintendo Switch. Of course, they have that justification of the cartridges cost more money, and that's definitely not the case here. For years, people were saying digital games are going to get less expensive because they don't have to print a disc. They don't have to put it on a truck. They don't have to ship it across the ocean. You just click a button and download it. The costs are lower for distributing that game, for publishing that game, not for making that game, but for publishing that game, the costs are significantly lower. So therefore, we should pay less. And while that logic makes a whole lot of sense, we also have to understand that these business people are going to charge what people will pay. And we've already established that we will pay $60 for a brand new game. We established that a long time ago. So when we get a new, I hate using this term, but AAA game, I feel like the publishers feel completely justified in charging $60 for it because that is the precedent that we have set for a very long time now. Even though it doesn't make sense. Now, what is one of the reasons that they do this? Gosh, I started recording this before and then deleted it because I didn't like the direction that I went. So hopefully I haven't already said it in this version of the video. But another reason that digital games continue to cost the same price as the physical versions, which honestly, logically, we should pay less for the digital version than we do for the physical version. The reason that we don't follow that logic is because a lot of the brick and mortar stores, they say, if you want us to carry your game, you need to charge the same amount digitally that you do for the physical edition. Otherwise, you're going to undercut us and we're going to use up our valuable shelf space for your game and nobody's going to come in and get it when they can just buy it at home. The brick and mortar stores know that that's a possibility and that is their defense against it. And I feel like so far the publishers have just kind of rolled over and said, okay, brick and mortar, you rule the roost. We're going to do what you say. But as time goes on, I feel like that's going to be less and less true. At least I hope so, because I do feel like we're paying extra that we shouldn't have to because we're not paying for the trucks or the boats or the planes to ship these things or to make these things. We're just paying for the bits, and bits don't actually cost anything. That being said, as I said before, publishers are going to charge what the market has decided is a fair price. And a long time ago, we decided that $60 is a fair price for a game. And I kind of think it is. If you look at, if you adjust for inflation, video games used to be a lot more expensive than they are now. And not only did they used to be a lot more expensive adjusted for inflation, they also were a lot cheaper to make. So not only have games become more and more expensive to make, the price of them, if you're adjusting for inflation, has continually come down. So at the beginning of the video, I said that there were two answers. There was a long answer and a short answer. The short answer is, I don't know what games are going to cost. And the long answer is, now that you've listened to the whole thing, I don't know what games are going to cost. But what I think is a better question is, what do you think the games should cost? And I want you to be realistic. How much do you think is a fair price for games on Stadia? We'll talk both about brand new games and ports of old games. And I want you to let me know in the comment section down below. I'm going to read every single comment, and I want to know what you all think is a fair price both for new games and old games on Google Stadia. With that being said, if you haven't already, click that thumbs up button. It really does help YouTube know that we're making good content here. And then after that, you can click the subscribe button and click the bell so you get notifications. And then when I do get to have my second interview with John Justice and I get to ask him all those cool questions, you will be one of the very first people to be notified about that. Anyway, I'll see you soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye. After I posted my question about how much, or my video about how much will games cost, which you just listened to the audio of, I got a whole bunch of replies, which I thought was super interesting. Ross Taylor replied, they said, I don't mind the cost of a game being £60 for a AAA title. However, there has to be some assurances that these games will be playable indefinitely. Imagine sinking thousands of pounds into a library only for Stadia to shut up shop and you lose all your games. And for that, I can totally understand that. Google has said, look, there's very little that we can do to convince you that we are in this for the long haul. You can either believe us, you can either choose to believe us, or you can choose not to. And if you choose not to, then I suggest that you just wait and you can come back later when you realize that we are in this for the long haul. Google has put lots and lots of money into this. This is not one of those 20% projects where Googlers get to spend 20% of their time working on their own project. This is an all-hands call where everybody is putting lots and lots of time into this. And because they're putting lots of time into this, I completely expect that it's going to be around for a very long time. They said that they are already planning on the next 5 years worth of hardware, you know, that kind of thing. We're going to see Google Stadia be here for a very long time. And here's another thing that Google has said that I think is fantastic and directly is an answer to what Ross Taylor here is saying. They said that they have made assurances with their licensees. So if they license a game, let's say that they go and I'll give you an example. Let's say that they get the new Avengers game, you know, the Square Enix Avengers game, which is coming to Google Stadia. And then Square Enix loses the license to that game. You do not lose access to that game anymore. You can continue playing that game, even though Square Enix is no longer allowed to make it. That's an example that I think kind of might put some fears at ease. However, there's always going to be people out there who say, you don't own your games. And I understand that. You don't own your games. But if you buy a digital copy of a game on any system, you don't own your games. So that's how I feel about it. Samurai Squirrel, who has possibly the funniest name, wrote in and they said, regardless of the port changes they need to do, and this is again in response to the how much games should cost, regardless of the port changes they need to do, I don't think it should be the same price, even for a new game. I think they should follow Steam as an example. They have to port a PC version, yet games are normally cheaper than a standard console game because we don't actually own the game if we purchase on Steam. I think new should be £10 less. Is everybody from Europe who listens to the show? It's weird. I think new games should be £10 less. Old games around the same or £5 cheaper. Point it. I'm not sure what you mean by point it. Steam, you don't own the game and you don't own it on Stadia. And like I just got done saying, you don't own it on any platform if you're getting the game digitally. And technically, even if you get a disc, you're just buying a license to play the game, and they can revoke that license anytime they want. Just because it's never happened doesn't mean that it won't, although I highly doubt that that would happen. Now, this whole idea about the PC version games being cheaper because you don't own the game, I feel like that's a paper tiger. That's a false equivalent. That's not the reason why. The reason why is because going to a store, they tend not to have PC games on shelves. And PC games sitting on the shelf, if that were the case, then I bet you that the price would be the same as the physical copy that you get when you go into the store. I talked about this in that video, which, again, you just listened to a little bit ago. But I talked about this actually twice in the video. I didn't mean to, but I did. And the thing that you have to remember is a lot of these brick and mortar shops, they tell the publishers, if you want us to carry your game, then you have to make sure that you digitally charge the same price that we're going to charge in the store. And the MSRP is £60 or $60 or whatever it is. So therefore, it needs to be the same price on the eShop or on the digital store or wherever it is that you're going to buy the game. That's a deal that the publishers and the brick and mortar shops have made. Now, I had people, because I made that point when I made the video, and I had people push back at me on that, and they said, the brick and mortar shops aren't that powerful, and they don't, like the gamer, or not the gamer, the publishers don't need the brick and mortar shops as much as they say that they do. And I agree with you to a point, but what you have to realize is that you are somebody who listens to a podcast about video games, or you watch a YouTube video about video games. You are like the hardcore of the hardcore. Like, you are somebody who really pays attention. A lot of times people go into, like, they want a new game. They have no idea what games are out. So they walk into a store and they look around. And it's very important to a publisher that their games are visible. They want them to be visible when you walk in. So that's why they probably pay these brick and mortar shops to, you know, how they have TVs on in there. They pay them for those advertisements being advertised up there. They pay to be on the right shelf that is at the right height to have the face of we'll pretend that this is it doesn't matter. I'm doing an audio show. To have the front of the box facing out rather than the spine of it facing out. Like, they pay for all of this stuff in order to get the right placement in the right spots in the right times. And they wouldn't do that if that were not important to their bottom line. So while I do agree that if the publishers all got together and said, screw you, brick and mortar. We're not playing your games anymore. You're going to do things our way from now on. I think the brick and mortar shops would say, okay, yep, you win. I don't know if that's even legal. Like, wouldn't that be some kind of anti-competition laws or something? I'm not sure. Let's talk about the next topic, which is, I don't even remember what it was. We'll talk about it, though. Hey everyone, welcome back. I've got a quick little update from you. This one, again, comes from 9to5 Google. There's another update to a Google app on Android. And of course, 9to5 Google does the APK Insight posts where they decompile an app and tell us all of the stuff that's in it. I'm not going to go through everything that's in it because most of this is stuff that we don't care about. But this is the Google Home app, and it adds some extra support for Google Wi-Fi. Now, Google Wi-Fi, if you don't know, is this, well, I actually have it and it's awesome. It has three base stations which you can have around your house, although I think you can buy them in like one at a time. I bought the pack that had three of them. The reason for this is because my internet comes in on one side of the house and then the other side of the house could never get good Wi-Fi. So we bought these, and you place these throughout the house and they kind of create a mesh network throughout your house and they talk to everything. And ever since we've gotten that, the Wi-Fi in the house has been fantastic. So it really works great, and I'm a huge fan of Google Wi-Fi. Google Wi-Fi is apparently adding in some Stadia settings. This comes to us from, again, the APK Insight. So I'm going to scroll past the stuff that doesn't apply to Stadia, but here we are. It says, there are a handful of strings related to Google's upcoming game streaming service in version 2.15. Under Google/Nest Wi-Fi settings, there will be an option to optimize Stadia game traffic. This is very, very cool. So I've been thinking about this a lot because when we built this studio up here in the attic, there's actually right across the hall from my studio is my bedroom. And we've got a Chromecast in there. We've got a TV in there. But when we built the upstairs stuff and we built that bedroom and we built this studio, I was like, this studio needs to have Ethernet without a doubt. This has to have Ethernet. I did not make that decision when we built that room over there. So that means that my Chromecast is not using Ethernet. It's on Wi-Fi. And ever since Stadia was announced, I've been a little bit nervous about that, about how that would work. But now I really like that Google Wi-Fi is going to have the option to prioritize Stadia gaming traffic over other stuff. I think that this is huge, and for me, it's very exciting. So what else does it say in here? It says that this Wi-Fi gaming mode will have a support document that could work by prioritizing Stadia connections or whatever device you're using the Surface on. Another implementation could involve recognizing when a Chromecast is being used for Stadia and prioritizing that traffic. So basically, you turn on your Chromecast, you start playing a game, it communicates with Google's Wi-Fi point. It says, hey, by the way, we're playing a game, which means we have to have the best speeds for this particular device, and it prioritizes those packets over everything else. I think that that's really awesome. I do worry a little bit, just a little bit, because, you know, my son might be playing and I might be streaming on Twitch or something like that. And if that happens, then he might be stealing bits and slowing down my traffic. I might have to turn this on or turn it off depending on what exactly I'm doing. But, you know, it might just work fine. I have pretty fast internet, so that's not something I should have to worry about. All right, so in here it says that we've got Wi-Fi gaming mode, and it says gaming preferred. You can turn that on. Then there's another string that says optimize Stadia gaming traffic when active and available in your region. I'm not sure what that means. Like, why would optimizing Stadia traffic not work in... Oh, you know what this probably means? This probably means if Stadia doesn't work in the region that you're in, so let's say Stadia is not in the country that you're in, then this string won't activate. Now, I'm guessing that that's what that means. Keep in mind, I am not an engineer. I am not a software engineer. I don't know anything about programming. I know a little bit of Python, and that's it. So I'm doing this all just kind of from common sense. All right, now that would be pretty good news in and of itself. I can't talk today. But then we've got a second little piece of information, what I think is exciting. It says here, Chromecast devices can automatically enable your television's game mode when Stadia is active for smoother gameplay. Now, if you don't know about this, you would not be alone. There's a lot of people who don't realize that TVs have a game mode. And a lot of people will put it on the game mode and they'll look at it and they'll say, it doesn't really look all that good. So they'll switch away from the game mode. The game mode, the reason it doesn't look all that good is because it has all of the post-processing stuff turned off. So modern TVs, when they have a signal, let's say that they are not using game mode, they do a bunch of stuff to make the picture look better. Now that introduces a little bit of latency from when the signal comes through to when you actually get to see it. It's not very much, but it does add some latency. Game mode takes all of that stuff away, so when you're playing a game, you have less latency. Now, most people probably don't know about this. Most people probably aren't using game mode, and so they are introducing a little bit of latency when they play their games. Even using like home consoles like the Xbox One or the PS4 or the Nintendo Switch. So a lot of people just don't bother using game mode because at first glance, it doesn't look as good as the other modes. Apparently, Chromecast has the ability to detect, hey, we're playing Stadia, and then it can send a signal to your TV to say activate game mode so that you don't have to remember to do it. Because I know myself, I know I never switch my TV setting. I leave it on whatever one I decided at the beginning, and it's probably not game mode. I leave it on whatever setting that I turned it on, and I just leave it there because I can't be bothered to switch back and forth. Now, this does not say if a Chromecast can also turn game mode off. And I also don't know if this requires a certain HDMI spec, because I do know that the Chromecast can turn some TVs on and off. My TV that I have the Chromecast Ultra hooked up to in the bedroom across the hall, that does not respond. Like if I say, hey, keyword, shut off the TV, it doesn't work. It doesn't do anything. I can't have it turn on the TV either. I have to pick up the remote and do that myself. And it's not a big deal, but I know that not all TVs can support that. And there's nothing here that tells us whether or not that is supported via that special HDMI spec. So I don't know if a Chromecast is able to automatically do this with every TV and automatically switch it to game mode, or if it's just certain TVs. Let's just assume it's every TV. We also don't know if it's able to say, okay, we're done with playing Stadia. Let's switch over to not game mode, or whatever the previous mode that we were using would be. I do hope that that's the case, because that makes it probably the most user-friendly. You want to have as little friction as possible when it comes to this stuff. And I feel like so far Google is really, really thinking about the friction, the things that slow people down, and they're taking all of these things into account. I honestly have to say, I never would have thought of Google Wi-Fi prioritizing Stadia traffic over other stuff. Like, that wouldn't have occurred to me. I would not have thought to have the Chromecast automatically turn game mode on in order to decrease your latency. So, I mean, Google is firing on all cylinders. They're doing all of this stuff that I personally hadn't thought of. And I just got to say, way to go, Google. So if you didn't know, we also have a podcast here at StadiaCast. You can listen to it by heading on over to anchor.fm/StadiaCast, or you can just go to runjumpstomp.com/shows. And tune in very, very soon for my second interview with John Justice. He is an executive. He's a vice president at Google, and he is also the head of product at Stadia. We're going to have a video for that coming up very soon. And if you like this, hit the like button. If you want to know when that video pops up, make sure that you subscribe and click the bell for notifications. I will see you guys next time. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye. All right, when I posted the Google Wi-Fi video, I got a bunch of responses. You guys are fantastic. Thank you for responding. Matt said, many modern routers already have traffic prioritization options called QoS. I've used them with mixed results. Many of them can prioritize either a specific device or a service like YouTube traffic or Netflix traffic. They haven't always behaved well, depending on the router. But hopefully, since Google has a vested interest in Stadia, this will pan out to be a good implementation. I expect other routers will have this option eventually, and even if they don't have a service-level option specifically to target Stadia traffic, most modern routers will at least let you pick your Chromecast Ultra or other preferred device to prioritize traffic. And while that's all true, and thank you very, very much, Matt, for letting me know about it, while that is all 100% true, there is something about using an app and just clicking a little button that is so much easier than most routers. When you, like, if you want to configure the router, you got to go to like 192.168.0.1 or something like that in a browser. Nobody knows how to do that. Whereas the Google Wi-Fi router is just an app on your phone, and it's so stinking easy. In fact, somebody sent me screenshots of the stuff that I had mentioned in the video. And I was like, yep, that looks super easy. And it explains it to the user, and it's simply just a flip. You just flip it over and it's going to work. So I think that that's awesome. Also, in response to that, because I talked a little bit about TVs and how different TVs have different abilities, Robert F. Harris Jr. mentioned, check your TV to see if it supports CEC. That's how devices can send commands back over HDMI. Some TVs have it off by default, and I checked both of my TVs, and they both had it off by default, and I turned it on, and it was awesome, because then I said, hey, keyword, let's watch whatever, and my TV turned on, and I was just like, I live in the future. So thank you very much, Robert, for sending in that information. You are awesome. All right. Before we get out of here, I got a super chat earlier from Joel who said, am I bummed with no mention of Stadia at BlizzCon? And I am super bummed. Like, I was sure that Blizzard was going to have Phil Harrison come out and say, and by the way, all of these games are going to be available on Stadia. And they didn't. I mean, we even had Bobby Kotick say that he was bullish on Stadia. So does that mean that we're not getting this? Doesn't mean that. It could be that they decided to wait for a Kinect. You know, think of it this way. If you're Blizzard, you got BlizzCon, everybody's looking at your stuff already, right? After BlizzCon, there's a Stadia Kinect, and then everybody looks at your stuff again. So that gets multiple people interested. So maybe, I'm really hoping, maybe, because I want Diablo 4, and I want Overwatch 2, and I want to play them on Stadia. But maybe those games will come to Stadia, and we will get that announcement at a Stadia Kinect instead of at BlizzCon. I think it would have been more impactful for the people who are already following Stadia and the people who are already Blizzard fans for Phil Harrison to be at BlizzCon and have him say it's all coming to Stadia. But I think for everybody else who doesn't pay nearly as close attention as we do, I think for a lot of them, it's going to make a lot more sense for them to get in the news cycle multiple times. So just because they haven't already told us that it's coming doesn't mean that it's not coming. All right. I am done with the show, but I'm going to hang out for a while and chat with the over 400 people who are here because you guys are awesome. And thank you very much for listening. Let me do the outro for the show. If you want to follow the show on Twitter at StadiaCast, you can also follow me at RunJumpStomp, my co-host who's not here today at DazMe, and make sure that you use the hashtag StadiaCast so that we can find your tweets. I did have a bunch of tweets, but I did not get to them today because I talked for way too long. But that's how it goes. They'll just have to save until next week. You can also join my Discord over at runjumpstomp.com/discord. And if you want to join Lloyd's Discord, his is at resd.tv/discord. The music for the show is Subterranean Kamikaze by Zircon. Make sure you check out their stuff at zirconstudios.bandcamp.com. I'll be back after this.